in 3 months. I don't think I realized until this moment how weird it's been without her. Nora must be thinking the same thing I am, because she says, I can't believe you have to go back in 2 days. Alice purses her lips for a minute, but doesn't speak. The air feels chilly, and I slide my hands into the sleeves of my hoodie. But then my phone buzzes. Text from Monkey's asshole. Hey, is there anything going on this weekend? A moment later. Like with Abby, I mean. It seems Martin doesn't give a shit about punctuation, which is totally not surprising. I write back. Sorry, family stuff. Sister's in town. His instantaneous reply. It's cool, Spear. My brother's in town, too. He says hi. And I don't even know if it's supposed to be a joke or a threat or what, but I hate him. I seriously fucking hate him right now. Hey, Alice says eventually, tucking her legs up onto her chair. Our parents have gone to bed, and it's definitely getting colder out here. I don't know if anyone's still hungry, but I have like 3/4 of a box of Chips Ahoy still sitting in my carry-on bag. Just putting that out there. Thank God for Alice. Thank God for Chips Ahoy. I'm going to have an awesome night with my sisters, and I'm going to stuff my face with cookies, and I'm definitely going to forget about Monkey's asshole and his shady little winky emoticon. We relocate to the living room couch, and Bieber passes out cold with the whole front end of his body in Alice's lap. Anyone want a Nick Eisner? Nora asks. Are you serious? Yes. Go get the peanut butter, says Alice in her bossy voice. A Nick Eisner is a cookie with a random glop of peanut butter on top. Because when we were 5, Nick thought that's what people meant by peanut butter cookies. Admittedly, they're delicious. But in my family, you never live something like that down. How is little Nick Eisner? He's the same, still glued to his guitar. And he'd be totally butthurt if he knew Alice still calls him little. Nick has had a minor level crush on Alice since we were in middle school. I was about to ask. So cute. I'll tell him you said that. Yeah, don't do that. Alice sinks her head back into the couch cushion, rubbing her eyes behind her glasses. Sorry, she yawns. Early flight and catching up from this week. Midterms? Asks Nora. Yep, says Alice. And it's so obvious that there's something else, but she doesn't elaborate. Bieber does this sudden loud-ass yawn and rolls onto his side, so his ear flips inside out. And then his lips twitch. He's a weirdo. Nick Eisner, Alice says again, and then she grins. Remember his bar mitzvah? Nora giggles. Oh, God, I say. It's really the perfect time to bury my head in a pillow. Boom, boom, boom. No, wait. It's the perfect time to smack Alice with a pillow. She blocks it with her feet. Really, Simon? We can clear a spot on the floor right now if you want, Alice says. Simon Spear, dance break, says Nora. Yep, okay. Nick's mistake was inviting my whole family to his bar mitzvah. Mine was attempting to pop and lock to Boom Boom Pow in front of them. There's no such thing as a good idea when you're in 7th grade. Don't you wish you could go back in time and just shut it down? Like, hey, middle school Alice, stop it. Stop everything you're doing. OMG, Nora shakes her head. I can't even think about middle school. Seriously? I mean, Alice was the one who once spent a month wearing elbow-length silk gloves. And I'm pretty sure it was me who ate 5 cookie cones at the Ren Fair in 6th grade... and then vomited into a wax mold of my own hand. Worth it. But Nora? I don't even know what she has to be embarrassed about. It doesn't seem like this would be genetically or developmentally possible, but she was kind of cool in middle school. Under the radar cool. The kind of cool that comes from teaching yourself guitar and wearing normal clothes and not running a Tumblr called Passion Pit Obsession. I guess even Nora is haunted by the ghosts of middle school. Yeah, I wish someone would have told middle school Simon to please try to be awesome. Just try. You're always awesome, bub, says Alice, stretching over Bieber to tug the end of my foot. I'm Bub and Nora is Boop, but only to Alice. And your dance moves are super awesome, she adds. Shut up, I say. Everything is a little more perfect when she's here. And then Alice leaves and school starts again in all its suckery. When I get to English class, Mr. Wise gives us a villainous smile that can only mean he's finished grading our short essay quizzes on Thoreau. And I'm right. He starts handing them back to people, and I can see that most of them are wrecked with red ink. Leah barely glances at hers before folding and tearing off the bottom and creasing it into an origami crane. She looks extra pissed today. I'm 100% certain it's because Abby came in late and squeezed in between her and Nick on the couch. Mr. Wise slips through the stack and licks his finger before touching my paper. I'm sorry, but some teachers are seriously gross. He probably rubs those fingers all over his eyeballs, too. I can just picture it. When I see the perfect score circled at the top of my paper, I'm a little bit amazed. It's not that I'm bad at English, and I actually did like Walden, but I think I got about 2 hours of sleep, max, the night before that quiz. There's just no freaking way. Oh, wait. I'm right. There is no freaking way, because this isn't my freaking test. Way to remember my name, Mr. Wise. Hey, I say. I lean across the aisle to tap Bram on the shoulder. He turns sideways in his chair to face me. Looks like this is yours. Oh, thanks, he says, reaching out to take it. He has long, kind of knobbly fingers. Cute hands. He looks down at the paper, glances back up at me, and blushes slightly. I can tell he feels weird about me seeing his grade. No problem. I mean, I'd keep the grade if I could. He smiles a little bit and looks back down at his desk. You never really know what he's thinking. But I have this theory that Bram's probably really funny inside his own head. I don't even know why I think that. But seriously, whatever inside jokes he has with himself, I think I'd like to be in on them. When I walk into rehearsal that afternoon, Abby is sitting in the front row of the auditorium with her eyes closed and her lips moving. Her script is open on her lap, and she's got one hand covering some of the lines. Hey, I say. Her eyes snap open. How long have you been standing here? Just a second. Are you working on your lines? Yep. She turns the script upside down, using her leg to hold her place. There's something odd about her clipped tone. You okay? Yeah, fine. She nods. A little stressed, she adds finally. Did you know we have to be off book by the end of break? By the end of Christmas break, I say. I know. That's like over a month away. You'll be fine. Easy for you to say, she says. You don't have any lines. And then she looks up at me with raised eyebrows and a perfectly round mouth, and I can't help but laugh. That was so bitchy of me. I can't believe I said that. It was super bitchy, I say. You're like a stealth bitch. What did you call her? Asks Martin. I swear to God, that kid pops up out of nowhere and burrows into every conversation. It's okay, Marty. We're just messing around, says Abby. Yeah, well, he called you a bitch. I really don't think that's okay. Oh, my God. He's seriously going to bust in here, totally miss the joke, and then turn around and lecture me about my fucking language? That's great, Martin. Just knock me down so you can look good in front of Abby. And I mean, the whole idea of Martin Addison taking the moral high ground when he's in the middle of blackmailing me? That's just so fucking awesome. Martin, really, we were kidding. I called myself a bitch. She laughs, but it comes out strained. I stare down at my shoes. If you say so. Martin's face is extra pink, and he's playing with the skin on his elbow. I mean, seriously, if he's so dead set on impressing Abby, maybe he should stop being so twitchy and awkward and annoying all the time. Maybe he should stop pulling the goddamn skin around his elbow. Because it's completely disgusting. I don't even know if he realizes he's doing it. The worst part of it is, I know perfectly well that if Alice heard me using that word, she would call me out too. Alice is pretty hardcore about when it's appropriate to use the word bitch. Appropriate? The bitch gave birth to a litter of adorable puppies. Inappropriate? Abby is a bitch. even if I said she was a stealth bitch, even if I was joking. It may be crazy Alice logic, but I feel a little weird and awful about it anyway. I choke out an apology, and my face is burning. Martin's still standing there. I seriously can't get away fast enough. I walk up the steps to the stage. Ms. Albright is sitting next to Taylor on one of the platforms, pointing at something in Taylor's script. Downstage, the girl who plays Nancy is giving a piggyback ride to the guy who plays Bill Sykes. And offstage left, this sophomore girl named Laura sits on top of a stack of chairs, crying into her sleeve. And I guess Mila Odom is comforting her. "You don't even know that," Mila says. "Seriously, look at me. Look at me." Laura looks up at her. "It's the freaking Tumblr, okay? Half that shit is made up." Laura's voice is broken and sniffly. "But there's a little bit of truth to every..." "That's seriously bullshit," says Mila. "You need to just talk to him." And then she sees me standing there listening and shoots me the stink eye. So here's the thing. Simon means the one who hears, and Spear means the one who watches, which means I was basically destined to be nosy. Cal and two of the senior girls are sitting outside the dressing room with their backs to the wall and their legs stretched out in front of them. He looks up at me and smiles. He has a really nice, easy smile. You can tell it's the kind that looks cute in pictures. I still feel a little unpleasant about the whole Abby and Martin conversation, but I think I may be on my way to feeling better. "Hey," I say. The girls sort of smile at me. Sasha and Brianna are both Fagin's boys, like me. It's funny, I'm literally the only one of Fagin's boys played by an actual guy. I guess it's because girls are smaller or look younger or something. I don't even know. But it's slightly awesome, because it means I'm the tallest person on stage during those scenes. Which doesn't happen all that often, to be honest. "What's up, Simon?" Cal says. "Oh, well, nothing. Hey, are we supposed to be doing anything right now?" And as soon as I ask it, I start blushing, because the way I phrased it totally makes it sound like I'm propositioning him. "Hey, Cal, are we supposed to be making out right now? Are we supposed to be having mind-blowing sex in the dressing room right now?" But maybe I'm just paranoid, because Cal doesn't seem to read anything into it. "Nah, I think Ms. Albright is just finishing some stuff up, and then she'll tell us what to do." "Works for me," I say. And then I notice their legs. Sasha's leg overlaps with Cal's just the tiniest bit, almost at the ankle. So who the hell knows what that means? I think I'm ready for this shitty day to be over. Of course, it's pouring down rain when Ms. Albright lets us out, and I soak a big butt-shaped wet spot into the upholstery of my car. I can barely dry off my glasses because my clothes are so wet, and I don't remember to put my headlights on until I'm already halfway home, which means I'm honestly lucky I didn't get arrested by now. As I make the ride into my neighborhood, I see Leah's car stopped at the light, waiting to make a left. So I guess she's leaving Nick's house. I wave to her, but it's raining so hard that it's pointless. The wipers arc back and forth, and there's this kind of tightness in my chest. It shouldn't bother me when Nick and Leah hang out without me. It just feels like I'm on the outside somehow. Not all the time. Just sometimes. But yeah, I feel irrelevant. I hate that. 12. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, December 2nd at 5:02 p.m. Subject, I should be writing an essay for English class. I'd rather write to you. I'm in my room, and I have a window right next to my desk. It's so sunny out, and it looks like it should be really warm outside. I feel like I'm dreaming. So, Jacques, I have to confess that I've been curious about your email address for a long time. I finally broke down and consulted the mighty Googler, and now I see that it's a lyric from an Elliott Smith song. I've actually heard of him, but I had never heard his music, so I downloaded Waltz Number 2. I hope that doesn't freak you out. I really like it. It surprised me because it's a really sad song, and that's not what I would expect coming from you. But I've listened to it a few times now, and the funny thing is, it really does remind me of you somehow. It's not the lyrics or even the overall mood of the song. It's something intangible. I think I can imagine you lying on a carpet somewhere listening to it, eating Oreos, and maybe writing in a journal. I also have to confess that I've been looking extra carefully at people's t-shirts at school to see if someone might be wearing an Elliott Smith shirt. I know it's a long shot. I also know it's really unfair because I shouldn't be trying to figure out your identity when I don't give you any good clues about my own. Here's something. My dad's driving in from Savannah this weekend, and we're doing the traditional Hotel Hanukkah. It will be just him and me, and I'm sure we'll hit all the awkward highlights. We'll do the non-lighting of the menorah, because we won't want to set off the smoke detectors. And then I'll give him something underwhelming like Aurora coffee and a bunch of my English essays. He's an English teacher, so he likes getting those. And then he'll have me open 8 presents in a row, which just drives home the fact that I won't see him again until New Year's. And the thing is, I'm actually considering doubling down on the awkward factor and turning this mess into a coming out thing. Maybe I should capitalize that. Coming out thing. Am I crazy? Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, December 2nd at 9:13 p.m. Subject, regarding I should be... Blue. Okay, first things first. How did I not know you were Jewish? I guess this is you giving me a clue, right? Should I be looking in the halls for guys in yarmulkes? Yes, I looked up how to spell that. And your people are very creative, phonetically speaking. Anyway, I hope the HH goes well. And by the way, Aurora coffee is totally not underwhelming. In fact, I'll probably steal your idea, because dads freaking love coffee. And my dad will especially go for it, because of the little 5 points factor. My dad has this hilarious idea that he's a hipster. So, most importantly, Blue, the coming out thing. Wow. I mean, you're not crazy. I think you're awesome. Are you worried about how he'll react? And are you going to tell your mom, too? Okay. I am also very impressed that you Googled your way to Elliott Smith, who was quite possibly the greatest songwriter since Lennon and McCartney. And then everything you said about the song reminding you of me is just so flattering and amazing that I don't even know what to say. I'm speechless, Blue. I'll say this. You are dead right about the Oreos and the carpet, but wrong about the journal. The closest thing I've ever had to a journal is probably you. Now you should go download Oh Well Okay and Between the Bars. I'm just saying. So I hate to say it, but it's probably a waste of your time to try to figure out who I am by looking at the bands on people's t-shirts. I almost never wear band t-shirts, even though I kind of wish I did. I think for me, listening to music is a very solitary thing. Or maybe that's just something people say when they're too lame to go to live shows. Either way, I am basically glued to my iPod, but I haven't really seen anyone live. And then I end up feeling like wearing a band's shirt without going to their show would be kind of like cheating. Does that make sense? For some reason, the whole thought of ordering some band's shirt online makes me feel weirdly embarrassed. Like maybe the musician wouldn't respect it. I don't know. Anyway, all things considered, I agree that this was a far more satisfying use of my time than writing English essays. You are very distracting. Shock. From bluegreen118@gmail.com. To hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, December 3rd at 5:20 p.m. Subject, regarding I should be... Jacques, about you not knowing I was Jewish. I know I've never mentioned it. I'm not even Jewish, technically, because Judaism is matrilineal, and my mom's Episcopalian. Anyway, I still haven't decided if I'm really going to go through with it. It wasn't something I thought I'd be ready to do anytime soon. I don't know why, but lately I've just felt this urge to put it out there. Maybe I just want to get it over with. What about you? Have you thought about the coming out thing? It gets complicated when you bring religion into the equation. Technically, Jews and Episcopalians are supposed to be gay-friendly, but it's hard to really know how that applies to your own parents. Like, you read about these gay kids with really churchy Catholic parents, and the parents end up doing P-flag and pride parades and everything. And then you hear about parents who are totally fine with homosexuality, but can't handle it when their own kid comes out. You just never know. I think instead of downloading the Elliott Smith songs you mentioned, I'll just drop a hint to my dad that I want a couple of his albums for Hotel Hanukkah. I guarantee you that he has about 6 of my presents picked out, and is desperate for some kind of hint about what else he should be getting me. So, I know you and I can't really buy each other gifts in real life, but just know that if I could, I would order you all kinds of band t-shirts online, even if it meant losing the respect of musicians everywhere. Because I'm sure that's how it works, Jacques. Or we could just go to a live show. I mean, I don't actually know anything about music, but I'm guessing it would be fun if it was with you. Maybe one day. I'm glad that you find me distracting. It wouldn't be fair otherwise. Blue. 13. It's Thursday, and I'm in history class, and apparently Miss Dillinger just asked me a question, because everyone is looking at me like I owe them something. So now I'm blushing and trying to bullshit my way through it, and judging by her twisty, teacherly frown, I don't think it's going very well. I mean, when you think about it, it's a little fucked up that teachers think they get to dictate what you think about. It's not enough if you just sit there quietly and let them teach. It's like they think they have a right to control your mind. I don't want to think about the War of 1812. I don't want to know what the hell was so impressive to a bunch of freaking sailors. What I want is to sit here and think about Blue. I think I'm starting to get a little obsessed with him. On one hand, he's so careful all the time about not giving me details about himself. And then he turns around and tells me all kinds of personal stuff. And it's the kind of stuff that I could totally use to figure out his identity if I really wanted to. And I do want to. But I also don't. It's just so totally confusing. He's confusing. Simon! Abby taps me frantically from behind. I need a pen. I hand one back to her, and she thanks me under her breath. I look around and realize that everyone is writing. Miss Dillinger has written a website address down on the board. I don't know what the heck it's for, but I guess I'll find out when I get around to looking it up. I copy the address into the margin of my notes, and then outline it in zigzags, like a comic book pow. I'm a little hung up on Blue's parents being religious. I feel like a freaking moron, honestly, because I'm basically the most blasphemous person in the world. Like, I don't even know how not to use the Lord's name in vain. But maybe it's not a big deal to him. Him being Blue, not the Lord. I mean, Blue's still emailing me, so I guess he couldn't have been too offended. Miss Dillinger gives us a break, but it's not the kind of break where you can go anywhere. So I just sit and stare into space. Abby comes over and kneels and rests her chin on my desk. Hey, where are you today? What are you talking about? You're like a million miles away. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Martin climbing over someone's chair to join us. Every time. I swear to God. What's up, guys? Haha, says Abby. Your shirt is hilarious. Martin is wearing a t-shirt that says, Talk Nerdy to Me. Are you guys going to rehearsal today? Oh, it's optional now? I ask. And then I do this thing I picked up from Leah, where you kind of cut your eyes to the side and narrow them. It's more subtle than rolling your eyes. Much more effective. Martin just looks at me. Yeah, we're going, Abby says after a moment. Yeah, Spear? Martin says suddenly. I've been meaning to talk to you. His cheeks have gone pink, and a red blotch unfurls around the collar of his t-shirt. I've been thinking. I really want to introduce you to my brother. I think you guys have a lot in common. Blood rushes to my face, and I feel that familiar fucking prickle behind my eyes. He's threatening me again. That's so cute, Abby says. She looks back and forth from Martin to me. Oh, it's adorable, I say. I stare Martin down, but he turns away quickly, looking miserable. Seriously? That asshole deserves to feel miserable. Yeah, well, Martin shuffles his feet, still staring at this random point over my shoulder. I'm just going to talk about your sexual orientation now like it's my business, Simon. I'm just going to tell the whole goddamn school right here, right now, because I'm an asshole, and that's just how it's going to go down. Hey, wait, I say. This is random, but I was just thinking, do you guys want to go to Waffle House tomorrow after school? I could quiz you on your lines. I hate myself. I mean, if you can't... Oh my gosh, seriously, Simon? That would be awesome. Tomorrow after school, right? I actually think I can get my mom's car. Abby smiles and pokes me in the cheek. Yeah, thanks, Simon, Martin says quietly. That would be great. Great, I say. I'm officially doing it. I'm letting Martin Addison blackmail me. I don't even know how I feel. Disgusted with myself. Relieved. You're seriously amazing, Simon, says Abby. I'm not. At all. And now it's Friday night, and I'm on my second plate of hash browns, and Martin won't stop asking Abby questions. I think it's his way of flirting. Do you like waffles? I do like waffles, she says. That's why I got them. Oh, he says, and there's a lot of wild, unnecessary nodding. He's basically a Muppet. They're sitting next to each other, and I'm across from them, and we've managed to get the booth back near the bathrooms where no one really bothers you. It's not all that crowded for a Friday night. There's a pissed-off-looking middle-aged couple in the booth behind us, two hipster guys at the counter, and a couple of girls in private school uniforms eating toast. Aren't you from D.C.? Yes. That's cool. What part? Tacoma Park, she says. You know D.C.? I mean, not really. My brother's a sophomore at Georgetown, Martin says. Martin and his freaking brother. Are you okay, Simon? Asks Abby. Drink some water. Can't stop coughing. And now Martin's offering me his water, pushing it toward me. Martin can freaking bite me. Seriously. Like he's so calm and collected. He turns back to Abby. So you live with your mom? She nods. What about your dad? He says. He's still in D.C. Oh, I'm sorry. Don't be, Abby says with a short laugh. If my dad lived in Atlanta, I wouldn't be hanging out with you guys right now. Oh, is he really strict? Asks Martin. Yep, she says, her eyes cut toward me. So do you think we should start Act Two? Martin stretches and yawns in this weird vertical maneuver, and I watch as he attempts to position his arm next to Abby's on the table. Abby pulls her arm away immediately and scratches her shoulder. I mean, it's pretty terrible to watch. Terrible and fascinating. We run through the scene. Speaking of disasters, I don't have a speaking part, so I shouldn't judge. And I know they're trying, but we're having to stop at every freaking line, and it's getting a little ridiculous. He got took away, Abby says, covering her script with one hand. I nod at her. Got took away in, She squeezes her eyes shut. In, coach? You got it. She opens her eyes, and I see her lips moving silently. Coach, coach, coach. Martin stares into space, grinding his knuckle into his cheek. He has extremely prominent knuckles. Martin has prominent everything. Huge eyes, long nose, full lips. Looking at him is exhausting. Martin. Sorry, my line? Dodger just said he got took away in a coach. A coach? What coach? Where coach? Almost. Never perfect. Always almost. We start the scene over again. And I think it's Friday night. In theory, I could be out getting drunk. I could be at a concert. I could be at a concert with Blue. but instead it's Oliver getting taken away in a coach. Again and again and again. I'm never going to learn this, Abby says.
Don't we have until the end of Christmas break? Martin asks.
Yeah, well, Taylor has everything memorized already. Abby and Martin both have huge parts in the play, but Taylor is the lead. As in, the play is Oliver, and Taylor plays Oliver.
But Taylor has a photographic memory, Martin says. Allegedly.
Abby smiles a little bit. And a very fast metabolism, I add.
And a natural tan, says Martin. She never goes out in the sun. She was just born tan.
Yeah, Taylor and her tan, says Abby. I'm so jealous. Martin and I both burst out laughing, because Abby definitely wins for melanin.
So would it be weird if I ordered another waffle? Asks Martin.
It would be weird if you didn't, I say. I don't really understand it. I almost think he's growing on me. 14. From hour2hour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, December 6th at 6:19 p.m. Subject, coming out thing. Did you do it? Did you do it? Did you do it? Shock. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hour2hour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, December 6th at 10:21 p.m. Subject, regarding coming out thing. Okay, I didn't exactly do it. I got there, and my dad had everything set up for Hotel Hanukkah. The menorah, presents wrapped and lined up on the nightstand, and a plate of latkes and two glasses of chocolate milk. My dad has to have chocolate milk with all fried stuff. Anyway, it looked like he put a lot of effort into it, so that was kind of nice. My stomach was churning, because I was really planning on telling him, but I didn't want to do it straight out of the gate. So I figured I'd wait until we finished opening presents. So you know how you hear stories about people coming out to their parents, and the parents say they already knew somehow? Yeah, my dad isn't going to say that. I'm officially certain that he has no idea I'm gay, because you will not believe what book he picked out to give me. History of My Life by Casanova. Or, as you would say, by freaking Casanova. Looking back, there was probably a perfect opportunity hiding in there somewhere. Maybe I should have asked him to exchange it for Oscar Wilde. I don't know, Jacques. I guess it kind of stopped me in my tracks. But now I'm thinking it might be a blessing in disguise, because in a weird way, I think it would have hurt my mom's feelings if I told my dad first. It can be a little complicated with divorced parents. This whole thing is really overwhelming. Anyway, my new plan is I'm going to tell my mom first. Not tomorrow, because tomorrow is Sunday, and I just think it would be better if I don't do it right after church. Why is it so much easier talking about this stuff with you? Blue. From hour2hour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, December 7th at 4:46 p.m. Subject, regarding coming out thing. Blue. I can't believe your dad got you a book by freaking Casanova. Just when you think your parents couldn't be more clueless, right? No wonder you couldn't tell them then. I'm sorry, Blue. I know you were kind of excited to do it. Or maybe you were just nauseated, in which case I'm sorry you got nauseated over nothing. I can't even wrap my mind around the politics of coming out to divorced parents. I was basically planning to sit my parents down on the couch at some point and get it over with in one go. But you can't really do that, can you? It makes my heart hurt for you, Blue. I just wish you didn't have to deal with that extra layer of awfulness. As for why it's easier to talk to me about this stuff, maybe it's because I'm so cute and grammatical. And do you really think I'm grammatical? Because Mr. Wise says I have a thing about sentence fragments. Shock. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hour2hour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, December 9th at 4:52 p.m. Subject,
regarding coming out thing. Jacques. Just so you know, your being cute isn't the reason you're easy to talk to, because it really should be the opposite. In real life, I go totally silent around cute guys. I just freeze up. I can't help it. But I know the real reason you were asking was because you wanted to hear me call you cute again, so I will. You're cute, Jacques. And I guess you do have a thing about sentence fragments, but I sort of love it. So, I'm not sure whether you meant to tell me your English teacher's name. You're dropping a lot of clues, Jacques. Sometimes I wonder if you drop more clues than you mean to. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for everything. It was such a strange, surreal weekend, but talking to you about it made it so much better. Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, December 10th at 7:11 p.m. Subject, regarding coming out thing. Blue. Yeah. Mentioning Mr. Wise was not intentional. I guess you can really narrow things down in a major way if you choose to. I feel kind of strange about that. Sorry I'm such a huge freaking idiot. So who are all these cute guys who make you so nervous? They can't be that cute. You better not love their sentence fragments. Keep me posted about all forthcoming conversations with your mom, okay? Jacques. 15. I guess we're making this our thing, reading Dickens at the WAHO. Abby doesn't have a car tonight, so she comes home with me after school on Friday and brings her overnight bag. I know it must suck for Abby living so far away, but I kind of love our sleepovers. Predictably, we arrive before Martin. It's more crowded tonight. We get a table, but it's near the entrance, so it already feels like we're under a spotlight. Abby sits down across from me and immediately gets to work building this fussy little house out of jam and sugar pouches. Martin bursts in, and within 60 seconds, he changes his drink order twice, burps, and manages to level Abby's sugar house with an overly enthusiastic finger poke. "Arg, sorry, he says. Abby shoots me a quick smile. "And I forgot my script. Crap. He's on a freaking roll tonight." "You can look on with me," says Abby, scooting closer to him. The look on Martin's face. I almost start laughing. We dive straight into Act Two, and it's a little bit less of a disaster than it was a week ago. At least I don't have to prompt every single line this time. My mind starts to wander. I'm thinking about Blue. Always Blue. Because really, my mind only wanders in one direction. I got another email from him this morning. Lately, we've been emailing almost every day, and it's a little crazy how much he's been on my mind. I almost fucked up a chem lab today because I was emailing Blue in my head, and I kind of forgot I was pouring nitric acid. It's weird, because Blue's emails used to be this extra thing that was separate from my actual life. But now I think maybe the emails are my life. Everything else sort of feels like I'm slogging through a dream. "Oh my gosh, Marty, no," says Abby. "Just no." Because suddenly, Martin is kneeling in the booth, head flung back, clutching his chest, and singing. He's just launched into this big, awesome number from the second act of the play. I mean, it's his full-on Fagin voice, low and trembly and vaguely British, and he's completely swept away in the moment. People are gaping at us, and I'm speechless. Abby and I just stare at each other in the most stunned, wholly awkward silence that's ever unfolded. He sings the entire song. I guess he's been practicing. And then, I'm not even kidding, he slides back down into his seat like nothing happened and starts pouring syrup on his waffle. "I don't even know what to say to you," says Abby. And then she sighs. And then she hugs him. Honest to God, he's like a freaking anime character. I can almost see hearts popping out of his eyes. He catches my eye, and his big banana mouth is just beaming. I can't help but grin back at him. Maybe he's my blackmailer. Maybe he's also becoming my friend. Who the hell knows if that's even allowed? Or maybe it's just that I'm feeling weirdly amped up and excited. I don't know how to explain it. Everything is funny. Martin is funny. Martin singing at Waffle House is entirely incomprehensibly hilarious. 2 hours later, we wave goodbye to him in the parking lot, and Abby tucks into my passenger seat. The sky is dark and clear, and we shiver for a minute while we wait for the heat to kick in. I back out of the spot and pull onto Roswell Road. "Who's this?" Abby asks. "Rilo Kiley." "I don't know them." She yawns. We're listening to the birthday mix Leah made me, which includes 3 Rilo Kiley songs from their first 2 albums. Leah has a girl crush on Jenny Lewis. You can't not have a crush on Jenny Lewis. I'm 20 years younger than her and unquestionably gay, but yeah, I'd make out with her. "Martin tonight," Abby says, shaking her head. "What a weirdo." "Kind of a cute weirdo," she says. I make the left onto Shady Creek Circle. The car is warmed up, and the streets are almost empty. And everything feels quiet and cozy and safe. "Definitely cute," she decides. "Though sadly, not my type." "Not my type either," I say, and Abby laughs. I feel this tug in my chest. I should really just tell her. Blue is coming out to his mom tonight. Or at least that's the plan. They're having dinner at home, and he's going to try to make sure she has a little wine, and then he's just going to suck it up and do it. I'm nervous for him. Maybe a little jealous of him. And I guess him telling her feels like a strange sort of loss. I think I liked being the only one who knew. "Abby, can I tell you something?" "Sure, what's up?" The music seems to fall away. We're stopped at a red, and I'm waiting to turn left, and all I can hear is the frantic clicking of my turn signal. I think my heart is beating to its rhythm. "You can't tell anyone," I say. "No one else knows this." She doesn't speak, but I perceive her angling her body toward me. Her knees are folded up onto the passenger seat. She waits. "I didn't plan to do this tonight." "So, the thing is, I'm gay." It's the first time I've said those words out loud. I pause with my hands on the steering wheel, waiting to feel something extraordinary. The light turns green. "Oh," says Abby. And there's this thick, hanging pause. I turn left. "Simon, pull over." There's a little bakery ahead on my right, and I pull into its driveway. It's closed for the night. I put the car in park. "Your hands are shaking," Abby says quietly. Then she tugs my arm closer, pushes my sleeve up, and cups my hand between her own. She sits cross-legged on the seat and turns completely sideways, facing me. I barely look at her. "This is the first time you've told anyone?" she says after a moment. I nod. "Wow." I hear her take a breath. "Simon, I'm really honored." I lean back and sigh and twist my body toward her. My seatbelt feels tight. I tug my hand away from Abby's to unlatch it. Then I give it back to her, and she laces her fingers through mine. "Are you surprised?" I say. "No." She looks at me directly. Lit only by streetlights, Abby's eyes are almost all pupil, edged thinly with brown. "You knew?" "No, not at all." "But you're not surprised?" "Do you want me to be surprised?" She looks nervous. "I don't know," I say. She squeezes my hand. I wonder how it's going for Blue. I wonder if Blue is feeling the same flutter in his stomach that I feel right now. Actually, he's probably feeling more than a flutter. He's probably so nauseated he can hardly choke the words out. My Blue. It's weird. I almost think I did this for him. "What are you going to do?" Abby asks. "Are you going to tell people?" I pause. "I don't know," I say. "I haven't really thought about it." I mean, eventually, yeah.
Okay, well, I love you, she says.
She pokes me in the cheek. And then we go home. 16. From bluegreen118 at gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, December 13th at 12.09 a.m. Subject, out and about.
Shock, I did it. I told her. I almost can't believe it. I'm still feeling so wild and jittery and not myself. I don't think I'll be able to sleep tonight. I think she took it well. She didn't bring Jesus into it at all. She was pretty calm about the whole thing. Sometimes I forget that my mom can be very rational and analytical. She's actually an epidemiologist. She seemed mostly concerned that I understand the importance of practicing safe sex every time, including oral. No, I'm not kidding. She didn't seem to believe me when I told her I'm not sexually active. So I guess that's flattering. Anyway, I want to thank you. I didn't tell you this before, Jacques, but you should really know that you're the reason I was able to do this. I wasn't sure I'd ever find the courage. It's really kind of incredible. I feel like there's a wall coming down, and I don't know why, and I don't know what's going to happen. I just know you're the reason for it. So, thanks for that. Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, December 13th at 11:54 a.m. Subject, regarding out and about. Blue. Shut up. I'm so freaking proud of you. I would hug you right now if I could. Wow. So between Ms. Every Time, including oral, and Mr. Let's Read About Freaking Casanova, your parents are seriously invested in your sex life. Parents need to stop being so freaking awkward. I will say, though, you shouldn't even be thinking about sex unless it's with someone really, really awesome. Someone who is such a badass that the insane kids in his neighborhood don't even think about peeing on his porch. Someone who has a little bit of a problem with fragmented sentences and accidental self-disclosures. Yep. So, you inspired me, Blue. I had my own coming out thing last night. Not to my parents, but I told one of my best friends, even though I wasn't planning to. And it was awkward and weird and really kind of nice. I feel mostly relieved and a little embarrassed, because I feel like I made it into a bigger deal than it needed to be. It's funny, though. A part of me feels like I jumped over some kind of border, and now I'm on the other side realizing I can't cross back. I think it's a good feeling, or at least an exciting feeling, but I'm not sure. Am I making any sense at all? But all of this about the walls coming down, I think you're giving me way too much credit. You're the hero tonight, Blue. You brought your own wall down. Maybe mine, too. Jacques. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, December 14th at 12:12 p.m. Subject, regarding out and about. Jacques. I don't even know what to say. I'm so proud of you, too. This is really momentous, isn't it? I'm guessing this is the kind of thing we remember for the rest of our lives. I know exactly what you mean about crossing the border. I think this is the kind of process that moves in one direction. Once you come out, you can't really go back in. It's a little bit terrifying, isn't it? I know we're so lucky we're coming out now and not 20 years ago, but it's still really a leap of faith. It's easier than I thought it would be, but at the same time, it's so much harder. Don't worry, Jacques. I only ever think about sex with people who hide from their eighth-grade girlfriends in bathrooms on Valentine's Day, and eat tons of Oreos, and listen to weirdly depressing and wonderful music, but never wear band t-shirts. I guess I have a very specific type. I'm not kidding. Blue. 17. I have to meet him. I don't think I can keep this up. I don't care if it ruins everything.
I'm this close to making out with my laptop screen. Blue, 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 blue. Seriously, I feel like I'm about to combust. I spend the entire school day with my stomach in knots, and it's completely pointless because it's not attached to anything real. Because really, it's just words on a screen. I don't even know his freaking name. I think I'm a little bit in love with him. All through rehearsal, I stare at Cal Price, hoping he'll fuck it up somehow and give me some sort of clue. Something. Anything. He pulls out a book, and my eyes go straight to the author's name on the cover. Because maybe the book is by freaking Casanova, and I only know one person who owns a book by freaking Casanova. But it's Fahrenheit 451. Probably something for English class. I mean, how does a person look when his walls are coming down? Really, a lot of people are having trouble focusing today, because everyone's obsessed with this sophomore who snuck into the chem lab and got his junk stuck in a beaker. I don't even know. Apparently it was on the Tumblr. But I guess Ms. Albright is sick of hearing about it, so she lets us out early. Which means it's actually still light out when I pull into the driveway. Bieber pretty much explodes with joy when he sees me. It looks like I'm the first one home. I sort of want to know where Nora is. The fact that she's out is highly freaking unusual, to be honest. I'm feeling so restless. I don't even want a snack. Not even Oreos. I can't just sit around. I text Nick to see what he's up to, even though I know he's playing video games in the basement, because that's what he always does in the afternoons until soccer season starts. He says Leah is on her way over, so I hook Bieber onto his leash and lock the door behind us. Leah is pulling into the driveway when we get there. She slides her window down and calls to Bieber, who naturally breaks away from me to jump up against her car. "Hello, sweet one," she says. His paws rest on the frame of her car door, and he gives her a single, polite lick. "Are you just getting off rehearsal?" she asks, as we walk around the path to Nick's basement door. "Yeah." I turn the doorknob and push the door open. "Bieber, no! Come on!" Like he's never seen a squirrel before. Good freaking Lord. "Jeez, so what, it's 2 hours a day, 3 days a week?" 4 days a week now," I say. "Every day but Friday. And we have an all-day rehearsal this Saturday." "Wow," she says. Nick shuts off the TV when we enter. "Assassin's Creed?" asks Leah, nodding toward the blank screen. "Yup," says Nick. "Awesome," she says. And I just kind of shrug. I give precisely zero shits about video games. I lie on the carpet next to Bieber, who is on his back looking absurd with his lips flapped up over his gums. Nick and Leah end up talking about Doctor Who, and Leah tucks into the video game chair, tugging the frayed hem of her jeans. Her cheeks are sort of pink behind her freckles, and she's making some point and getting really animated about it. They're both totally absorbed in the philosophy of time travel. So I let my eyes slide closed, and I think about Blue. Okay, I have a crush. But it's not like having a crush on some random musician or actor or Harry freaking Potter. This is the real deal. It has to be. It's almost debilitating. I mean, I'm lying here on Nick's basement carpet, the site of so many Power Rangers transformations and lightsaber battles and spilled cups of juice, and all I want in the entire world is for Blue's next email to arrive. And Nick and Leah are still talking about the freaking TARDIS. They don't have a clue. They don't even know I'm gay. And I don't know how to do this. Ever since I told Abby on Friday, I kind of thought it would be easy to tell Leah and Nick. Easier anyway, now that my mouth is used to saying the words. It's not easier. It's impossible. Because even though it feels like I've known Abby forever, I really only met her 4 months ago. And I guess there hasn't been time for her to have any set ideas about me yet. But I've known Leah since sixth grade, and Nick since we were four. And this gay thing, it feels so big. It's almost insurmountable. I don't know how to tell them something like this and still come out of it feeling like Simon. Because if Leah and Nick don't recognize me, I don't even recognize myself anymore. My phone buzzes. Text from Monkey's asshole. Hey, maybe another Waffle House thing soon? I ignore it. I hate feeling so distant from Nick and Leah. It's not like keeping a normal crush a secret, because we never talk about our crushes anyway, and it works out fine. Even Leah's crush on Nick. I see it, and I'm sure Nick sees it, but there's this unspoken agreement that we never talk about it. I don't know why the gay thing isn't like that. I don't know why keeping it from them makes me feel like I'm living a secret life. My phone starts vibrating, and it's my dad calling, which probably means dinner is on the table. I hate that I feel so relieved. I really am going to tell Nick and Leah eventually. I spend the first Saturday of Christmas break at school. Everyone sits in a circle on the stage in pajamas, eating donut holes and drinking coffee out of styrofoam cups. Except I'm next to Abby at the edge of the stage. My feet dangle over the orchestra pit, and her legs are in my lap. My fingers are sticky with powdered sugar. I feel so far away. I stare at the bricks. Some of the bricks on the back wall of the auditorium are a darker shade, almost brown, and they form this double helix design. It's just so random, but so weirdly deliberate. Double helixes are interesting. Deoxyribonucleic acid. I'll think about that. Trying not to think about something is like playing freaking whack-a-mole. Every time you push one thought down, another one nudges its way to the surface. I guess there are two moles. One is the fact that I've hung out with Nick and Leah after rehearsal 3 days this week, which means 3 chances to tell them about the gay thing, and 3 times wussing out. And then there's Blue, with his perfect grammar, who has no freaking clue how many times I proofread every email I send to him. Blue, who is so guarded and yet so surprisingly flirtatious sometimes, who thinks about sex and thinks about it with me. But you know, double helixes, twisty, loopy double helixes. Martin walks in through the doors in the back of the auditorium. He's wearing a long, old-fashioned nightgown and curlers. Oh, wow. He really? Okay. Abby nods, grinning up at Martin, who does a pirouette and immediately gets tangled in his nightgown. But he catches himself on the armrest of a chair and gives this triumphant smile. That's Martin. Everything's part of the show with him. Ms. Albright joins the circle on stage and calls us to order. Abby and I scoot in closer to the group. I end up next to Martin and flash him a smile. He punches my arm lightly but keeps his eyes locked forward, like a T-ball dad. A T-ball dad who dresses like my grandma. So here's the plan, Pajama Gang, says Ms. Albright. We're going to fine-tune the musical numbers this morning. Big ensemble numbers first, and then we'll split into smaller groups. We break for pizza at noon, and after that we run through the whole caboodle. Over her shoulder, I see Cal sitting on a platform, writing something in the margin of his script. Any questions? She asks. For those of us who are already off book, should we still carry our scripts to take notes? Asks Taylor, just making sure we know she's memorized her lines. This morning, yes. This afternoon, no. We'll go through the notes after we're done. I'd like to run both acts once without stopping. Obviously, it will be messy, and that's okay. She yawns. All right, so let's take 5, and then we'll jump into food, glorious food. I pull myself up, and before I can talk myself out of it, I walk over and sit beside Cal on his platform. I nudge him in the knee. Nice polka dots, I say. He smiles. Nice Labradors. I mean, he's cute, so I'll let it slide, but the dogs in my pants are clearly golden retrievers. I sneak a look at his script. What are you drawing? Oh, this? I don't know, he says. He pushes his bangs back and blushes, and good God, he's adorable. I didn't know you could draw. Sort of. He shrugs and tilts the binder toward me. He has this style of drawing that's all movement and sharp angles and bold pencil lines. It's not bad. Leah's drawings are better. But it hardly matters at all, because the important thing is that Cal's drawing is of a superhero. I mean,